This episode is brought to you by Summer School Electronics. With pedals like the Snow Day Delay, the Pep Rally Fuzz, the Trash Panda, and my personal favorite, the Science Fair, which is two classic dirt pedals in one with a mid-boosted overdrive on one side, a black lab rat circuit on the other, and a blend knob to blend between them to find the perfect classic stacked dirt sound you're looking for, it's hard not to find something you'll love. Mark builds all of his pedals by hand in Syracuse, New York, where he also works as a full-time educator. In addition to the super fun graphics on their pedals, Mark also offers custom artwork. Want your dog's face on a pedal? He can do it. Want your face on a pedal? He can make that happen too. Go over to summerschoolelectronics.com and make sure to tell them that 40 Watt Podcast sent you. How you doing, 40 Waters? How you like that sudden, abrupt music ending? My bad. I moved the fader way quicker than I should have. I've been out of practice, y'all. I've been out of town. Went to Summer NAMM last week. It'd be 2 weeks as you're listening to this since Summer NAMM, because we put out an episode as a Summer NAMM recap. If you listened through that 2 hours plus of complete and utter chaos and tomfoolery, thank you so much, because that's insane, and I appreciate all of you bringing your insanity to me. So, couple of things before we get started. As usual, wanted to welcome my newest Patreon, Ben Farr, and I bet I got that last name wrong after I told myself I'd get it right. But Ben joined at the $5 level. Those of you that don't already know, Ben is the madman behind Electromotive Sound pedals. He makes some super cool stuff. I just ordered his phaser pedal. It's insane. Check my Instagram. I just posted, by the time you're hearing this, it would have been last week, so you're probably going to have to scroll back because I've been on an Instagram kick. But you'll see it. Super awesome. Can't wait to get it in and give it a shot. So, speaking of Patreon, go over to Patreon. If you like the podcast, you can support and make this keep happening. I know some people think that, you know, podcasting is super easy. You just hold up a phone and you talk into it and you put it in the internet and it goes out in the ether. It costs money, y'all. And I operate at a net loss right now. So I'd love to operate at a break even. That'd be awesome. After that, it's just all gravy. But as you regular listeners will know, that I do donate 25% of the proceeds of my Patreon to charity. This year, it's going to be St. Jude Children's Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. Next year, I'm still taking suggestions. If you got a charity that's near and dear to your heart for next year's Patreon, let me know, because I plan on doing this for a while. The donating to charity is going to be for as long as I'm doing this. Go to our website, 40wattpodcast.com. Go to our link tree, which is linktr.ee/40wattpodcast, or our Patreon, patreon.com/40wattpodcast. You can support the show. You can buy t-shirts. You can buy stickers. You can find all of our social media where you can like, subscribe, bell icon, follow. I'm trying to get all these right, guys. Comment, share, all those things you can do. We really, really appreciate you sharing the show. And 2 minutes. Awesome. Got it all in. So today's episode, I'm super pumped and I'm super sad at the same time. So today we got Nashville guitarist Dominic Ruiz on the show. We were supposed to try to get together during Summer NAMM last week, but it was super insane. It got super crazy. I ended up on a wild tour of the Gibson Garage backstage and like their artist lounge and like, and went to Carter Vintage Guitars. I crunched the numbers. In one day, I played about $2 million worth of guitars, and it just completely blew my mind.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but we're making it happen now. So, Dominique, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, we were talking before we started recording, and I knew I had to get you on the show because, listeners, if you're on Instagram, which you probably are because that's my primary social media, you have seen Dominique on Instagram. If you have guitar anywhere in your algorithm, she is all over Instagram playing solos and intros to some of your favorite songs. That didn't happen by magic, y'all. So she's relatively new to Instagram, but she's been playing guitar for a long time. So we're going to talk about that. And I wanted to give her a chance to tell that story because some of y'all up in the comments are rude. Just saying. So, Dominique, how'd you get started playing guitar? First of all, you're not originally from Nashville, are you?
No, I'm from California.
Okay, so let's start. How'd you get into guitar and how'd you get to Nashville?
Yeah, great question. So actually, my parents met in a band. They're not professional musicians, but they both play guitar and they love music. My dad especially is amazing. And I have two siblings. I have a brother and a sister. And so my brother wanted to start learning how to play guitar. And so my dad started teaching him and my sister. And I didn't want to be left out. And it was the summertime and I had nothing else to do. So I was like, hey, teach me too. So I kind of went along with them. But we were doing classical guitar. And so that was really fun. But I listened to a lot of like rock music. I love the Foo Fighters. I love Nirvana. I love Led Zeppelin. So I asked my dad to start like teaching me some of that stuff too. And he bought me like a little Mexican Fender, you know, Strat. And I was like, Dad, Stairway to Heaven. You know, I didn't even know that that was a cliche. Truly, I had Led Zeppelin 4 and I liked the song. And, you know, I like Black Dog and some of the other songs too, sure. But they seemed a little bit harder to play. So I was like, I think I could do this. This goes with the classical guitar I've been doing. And so he really helped me. And then I kind of kept going with my lessons with classical guitar. And I ended up going to the San Francisco Conservatory of Music in high school. They like have a high school division. And so that was really awesome. And then I went to USC for classical guitar, but I fell in love with songwriting there. And I knew I didn't want to be a professional classical guitarist. I knew I wanted to be in music, but I didn't know how to make, you know, being a rock star a dream. I didn't think you could really professionally be in a band, which is funny because I listened to so much music. I just, you know, didn't know anyone that had done it. I didn't know anyone that was a professional musician. And I mean, I guess I could have looked it up on the internet, but for some reason that didn't occur to me. So sure. I just used YouTube to learn guitar. And so when I was at USC, I decided that like songwriting was what I loved. Didn't want to give them away my songs. I was going to be an artist. So I was a solo artist. You know, I did some stuff in LA. But I met a bunch of guitarists who were from Nashville and I was like, you guys are all so good. You know, I was at this blues jam. Like, wow, how are you so good? Like, tell me your secrets. They're like, we all live in Nashville. You should come here. Everyone's good at guitar here, which is true. It actually is true. Everyone is good at guitar in Nashville. It's crazy. It blows my mind like every week. So I ended up, you know, moving to Nashville, you know, both for the songwriting community and for the guitar community. And best decision I ever made. It's been so much fun. And I've got to learn so much out here.
You know, listeners of the podcast will know I lived in Murfreesboro for a couple of years. I was studying recording industry management over at MTSU. Ultimately didn't even, you know, ended up with a degree, not from MTSU, in music and audio engineering. I don't even work in that field anymore. I'm a public library director. This podcast is my tether to the music world that I hold on to. Even in Murfreesboro, it was, everyone's a good musician. Yeah. Everyone can sing. Everyone can write songs. You know, the tales I used to hear back then, and that was, you know, 03, 04 time, were like, you know, everybody does it. The big bands will pull some fan up on stage to play or sing a song or something like that. Yeah. It's like, don't do that in Nashville. They'll take your job. Don't do that in Nashville. You know, in Nashville, the valet slips their demo CD in your CD player in your car when they park. Not that, you know, nobody uses CDs anymore, but.
Yeah,
it's a wild world there in Nashville, and having just gone back for a few days, like it's been so long since I spent real time in Nashville. I'd been for some other things, but not music. Mm-hmm. And it just reminded me of that community, that culture that's there. It's really an unbelievable place. So you studied classical guitar. The tie between Stairway makes complete sense. It really does. So you get into rock and roll. You move to Nashville. And so now you're there, you do session work, you're playing in a band there. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So, when I, like I said, I was a solo artist out in LA, and when I moved out here, I was a solo artist too. And then I met my bandmate, Andrea. We actually met at the Blue Root Cafe and we went to the same college. We went to USC. And we weren't really friends there. We were just acquaintances who were in, like, we were in choir together and a couple other classes. So we recognized each other, but we weren't, you know, I didn't have her phone number or anything. I didn't know she was in Nashville. She didn't know I was there. And so she was like, hey, I recognize you. And so we actually started writing songs together and doing writer's rounds together, which in Nashville, it's a couple, it's maybe three or four different songwriters, and every person plays a song. And then you go back, around, quote, the circle, back to the beginning, everyone plays a song. So, it's usually an hour and everyone gets to play three or four songs. So we do those together and we start singing on each other's stuff. And so we formed a band just really naturally because we're like, this is so fun. We're already writing together and singing and playing together that we should just do this. So that's been fun. And then, like you're saying, I did some other session work, but definitely the Nashville session scene is its own thing. And the guitarists are just absolutely amazing at what they do. And they have so many guitars and so many pedals, and also that you could take it all away and they would still be brilliant. But, they're just so good at coming up with parts, and it seems simple, and it's not simple at all. So I've done some session work, but I'm definitely not, in the session scene because they have their own thing. But I do play a lot. We played a bunch of festivals. We play in downtown Nashville, play writers rounds. We play full band shows. So that's been really fun. And Nashville is a great place to be able to tour out of because you can drive so many places that are just, 1 hour, 2 hours, 6 hours away where you can go there and come back or go and stay the night. So yeah, that's been really fun too.
And it's funny, and when I was in Murfreesboro, the whole thing was, okay, you can come here and get your degree, but if you think you're going to stay here and make a living in Nashville area, you're going to have to go, because they're not kicking you out. They want people there, but there's so many people trying to do it. And you're right, some of those players, they can take a broom handle with screws and baling wire and make a hit record out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
it blows the mind completely. It's a totally different world. It's a guitar town.
It is absolutely a guitar town.
And that's what I love about it. I mean, guitar is my thing. This isn't green screen.
Yeah, I was like, you have the coolest guitars behind you, by the way.
It's an obsession. It's a broken obsession. Actually, I can't do this. I'm not good at this. This one I just bought last week on impulse at Eastside.
Yeah.
I couldn't leave it there. It looked so lonely.
What kind of guitar is it?
It's a 2013 Les Paul Traditional Pro.
Oh my gosh.
That has been reliced by a company called Dax and Company. Okay. I have some pictures on Instagram. It'll save me from dragging my in-ears all the way back there, which I will in my studio's a wreck because post-NAMM I took my podcasting rig, and so I'll inevitably pull something over if I try to walk over there.
But, no, don't do that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's a beautiful guitar. Wow.
It is. This is 25 years of horse trading, just buying, flipping, selling, trading, just over and over and over again. It's insane to think, 4 years ago, I was two electrics and an acoustic guy with one amplifier, and then it exploded, and it's bad. But we won't talk about my obsession. This is my own thing that I need help with. I'm going to hire a professional at some point. So Nashville is that town completely. Yes. And so it's got to be nice to have that level of player close to, even though there's so many of them. Like when I try to book my band and I start contacting the musicians that play in my band, and they're like, oh, well, I can do this date, but I can't do this date, or I can do this. And you start piecemealing bands from show to show. And it's like,
yes.
And I'm just doing covers right now. I've got this. The joke is I've been writing an EP for 15 years. And one day I'm going to write some songs I don't completely hate, and I'm going to put it out. But it's like, my regular bassist can't make it. Well, the next guy I know lives 2.5 hours away. And so the next guy that I know that I works well with my band, oh, he's 3.5 hours away, but the gig's an hour that way, so it's 4.5 hours. You start, it's like, oh, piecemealing musicians. In Nashville, you throw a rock and you hit a three pro musicians.
It's funny that you say, I was like, are you talking about my life? So we play, about every weekend, but it's funny. It's like you're saying, I take it for granted, sometimes that, for example, we're playing tomorrow night, on Saturday night, downtown Nashville, regular 4-hour kind of cover gig thing. And it took me I think contacting 51 drummers to find a drummer that was free. Bass was also hard, but that was only like 20 bass players. But like you're saying, the fact that I could find, you know, 50, and I also have to say the musician community is just amazing. You know, I have a couple friends. So many of them were like, hey, I'm out on the road, so I can't, but do you need help finding someone? Like, I can refer you to other guys, or like, you know, love to play with you on another gig. I haven't met any of these people. Right. We don't know each other, you know? And so I just feel like that's so cool that I can just text a stranger and they're so welcoming and so nice and so helpful. And it's like you're saying, it's a really cool thing that we do. First of all, have thousands of musicians yes. that live here, already know, you know, all these songs, can play them. You know, like, we play with a different band every week, pretty much. I love to play with the same band, although it is really fun to meet new people, but you know, everyone is just so busy and has gigs. And so each week, it blows my mind that I'm like, hi, good to meet you, when we get there. There's no rehearsal.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, they play the songs, and then we'll get requests, and they just know that, and they're like, oh, I've never heard this, but sure, we'll play it. And, you know, sometimes I know, being an audience member, you just want to have fun and not really know what goes on behind the scenes. But I'm like, do you understand that these people haven't heard this song that they're playing? Not even like, oh, they've never played it before. They haven't even heard it, and yep. they're killing it, you know. So it's definitely, it's really, really fun when you get to, you know, get up on stage and play with players like that.
Yeah, and they're not as common as Nashville would make you believe they are.
I know, no, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, is like, I have played with so many bands where, honestly, I was really awful too, but I have played in bands where the level of musicianship was very, very low, and that was including myself. And so I think that's part of what makes me so grateful when we play with these guys, and I'm just like, this is crazy. Like, you're just off the road with Tim McGraw, or you're just off the road with whoever, like, you know, and you're playing with me. Like, that's so cool. And it just, it, you know, it definitely makes the music fun, because it, I mean, first of all, it's sounds awesome, but you know, you feel more free to jam and take risks in your playing, and everyone's dancing, and yeah, it's definitely, it's a really cool thing that
we
have
here.
That
translates in a freshness to the music of people listening too, because mm-hmm. if you've got 4 or 5 players together and they're playing songs that maybe 2 of them have heard and communicated in a way that, hey, we can get this started and then we're going to figure yeah. it out as we go.
Yes.
You're not going to get note for note renditions. You're not going to get pure covers.
No, it's definitely not note for note renditions. We don't. Some bands do. Like I said, some bands definitely, if they have a regular slot, but we don't do that. And so, yeah, but like you're saying, it's a really fun thing, because you get some really cool moments and really cool jams and really cool parts. And you're saying it's part of the live show, you know, experience. It's not, you know, a tribute band. Right. We're just taking people's requests and going with the flow of the show. And so there's something that's really cool about that, because it's different every night.
Every night, and sometimes yeah. with the same players, it's different every night. Because
yeah,
that's another podcast for another time.
That's another podcast.
Yeah. So you've been doing this for a little while now. You've been in Nashville since.
We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported in part by String Joy Strings. I'm a snob. At least that's what people tell me. I'm never okay with good enough, and that's where String Joy Strings come in. They're better than good enough. They're the best. String Joy are making some of the finest strings available today right up the road from me in Nashville, Tennessee. They offer custom sets, balanced tension, coated strings, the works. If you need it, they can probably make it happen. You should be using String Joy Strings, and if you're going to order from them, you really could help this podcast out by clicking the affiliate link down in the description or show notes below. You get amazing strings, I get a little bit of that back to help the show keep going. It's a win-win situation. Get your String Joy Strings today.
For 6 years.
6 years.
So I'm like, what year? I always forget that last year happened. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I completely wiped last year from my memory.
I have no sense of time anymore. Yeah. I'm like, what? I'm like, last year doesn't count as a year, right?
And yeah, I catch myself all the time. It's like, you know, 3 years ago, oh, that was 4, because 2020 actually happened. That wasn't right. Our collective nightmare.
I know. It's so weird. I still think this year is 2020, probably because we're not totally out of it. It's like when I write the day, it's terrible. Whatever. We don't need to talk about that.
Early on in the podcast, I definitely talked about COVID more than I'd like to. Of course, now we're starting to see it creep back in, like Delta variant and all that. So I have some real anxiety as to what that's going to mean for live music here in the next few months.
I do too. Yeah.
So you make your living as a musician, singer,
yes.
songwriter, player.
Yes.
So last year was definitely rough. Let's talk about last year a little bit. So
yes,
got to be what was the impetus for you to get on Instagram and start doing something a little different. So talk about how that happened.
Yeah. So basically, my band had a really great year in 2019. I mean, every year, you know, it's fun. And every year you learn. But like I said, it's been about 5-6 years for us. And so we'd really gotten to the point where we were starting to play festivals and, you know, open for big acts like Jason Aldean and Tim McGraw. And we were just having so much fun out on the road. And, you know, you have your day jobs. And finally, you're like, I'm making a living at it doing shows. And so 2019 was just it was just for us personally, it was like a really great year. We were releasing music. It just felt like we were on a roll. Everything was going really well. And then 2020, you know, came I remember the very last show we did. It was a St. Patrick's Day show and they almost canceled it, but they were really kind and they didn't, you know, and that was the last show we played. And of course, you know, the festivals that we had booked for, you know, that spring and summer got canceled as they had to be. But, you know, we were still disappointed because that was what we were doing and what we were focusing on. And we always, you know, believed in the music and the power of music and we just loved playing it live. You know, neither of us were big fans of social media. We just didn't really care. We were on there because we had to be, but we just weren't passionate about it. You know, and so we were like, well, we're just going to keep focusing, you know, on what we can, which is songwriting, you know, recording and playing shows and, you know, just leave social media out of it pretty much.
Right.
And then when all of that, you know, studios got taken away from us and the live shows got taken away from us, we were like, and all we have left now is social media. and so we decided to start live streaming. And so actually there was a rumor on Facebook that they had announced that they weren't going to let you like play covers on there anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And that was like a rumor. And so we were really worried. And so, I only had like a couple followers on my YouTube channel. I just, you know, I had like, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 guitar videos on there, just a couple. And none of them had really done very well. I did do a cover of Brad Paisley's The Nervous Breakdown, which like he announced, but it still didn't have, you know, very many views, nothing. Sure. Everything I posted was just like 100 views, you know, nothing did very well. And so, but it was like for YouTube to be able to live stream on there, you had to get 1,000 subscribers.
Right.
And so I had the goal of let me put up some guitar content and try to get to 1,000 subscribers. So that way, if Facebook goes away, we have another way to connect to our audience. And we tried Twitch and we started TikTok. And so that was actually kind of the first thing is I started posting guitar videos on TikTok and, you know, got like 1 million views and 500,000 views on some stuff. And then, you know, Instagram came out with Reels. So I was like, well, maybe, you know, try that.
Yeah.
And, but it all came from this place of, well, I can't play live. Like now what? So I actually, one of my friends taught me how to record last year. We were like quarantining together for a little, we were, you know, the pod.
Yeah.
And so kind of when it was like, you know, safer in June, you know, he spent a couple days like teaching me how to record. So I built like, you know, just a really, really, really tiny home studio, AKA just a laptop and an Apollo Twin to plug my guitar into, you know, but I started learning how to do that. And then, yeah, I was like, well, if I can't play, like, you know, I really want to practice. So I actually started taking a lot of guitar lessons last year, which was so much fun. I got to do it, you know, on Zoom because of that, but it was still really awesome. And I got to take with some really great people, who were in LA, who play for like really big acts and play on SNL and all this cool stuff. And they all taught me some great things. And then I continued it. So I'm still taking guitar lessons right now with a really amazing guitarist in Nashville. And so that was one of the most fun things for me is that, you know, it was sad to be off the road, but also it gave me time to have all of these hours to A, learn how to record and B, practice. And, you know, sometimes with guitar playing, if you're a guitar player, you probably understand this, that you get to a point where you plateau and your level is kind of the same. And it's really easy to just keep playing the same thing over and over. And the chords that you know, you just keep playing those. And if you know one pentatonic scale, you just keep playing that. And that's good. That's great. There's nothing wrong with that. But I thought, well, since I have some time, let me see if I can learn more. You know, let me see if I can advance my playing a little bit. So between the guitar videos and just, you know, my passion for guitar and having the time to learn more, it was definitely a really fun journey to do that. So, yeah.
I think that's something that a lot of people who see guitarists on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, wherever they happen to see them, whether they are pros making a living doing it or they're demo folks demoing pedals or, but it's, you know, especially in the videos you do where you recreate some pretty classic sounds and solos and licks from, and also, I mean, that Brad Paisley solo is no slouch either. That tune is something
took me serious. 2 years to learn.
Yes, that is something serious. So to do that, this, you know, they think, oh, they're a guitar player, they can just do that. No. That takes lots of time to make sure you've got that sound, you've got that solo, then hitting record. They think everyone does it in one take.
Yeah.
I wish that were true. I really, like at my level, it's dozens, if not hundreds sometimes. So, and taking lessons during the pandemic is something I think a lot of people have done. And I should have taken more advantage of it is, to do Zoom lessons because, you know, I'm in Starkville, Mississippi. There are some good guitar players around here, but I'm not finding like the world-class teachers that are, you know, Nashville or LA or, you know, if you're really into jazz, New York, but other than that, and it's something I probably will take more advantage of because I think we're going to see more and more guitar teachers and not just guitar. Yeah. I saw a lot on TikTok of vocal teachers taking students over Zoom and that blew my mind. And I need.
Oh, I've been taking vocal lessons. But like you're saying, it's the teacher in LA and a teacher in New York. And so it's always for me in online.
Yeah, that is. See, I think is going to be, and I said this to someone yesterday. I don't want to call anything about the pandemic a silver lining. No, it's been terrible. But I think some of the shifts in thinking are going to be good. Things like, you know, there's so much more we could be doing online or musicians. Like, for example, I got a gig tonight. I'm playing. I put up a chalkboard that has my Venmo and my, you know, Cash app. You know, because nobody carries cash. And for a while, that meant that tips in a bucket weren't great. But now, here you go. Here's a way you can PayPal me, you know, if you
absolutely
need to. It's a completely different ballgame for musicians. And of course, as I said before we started, y'all, if you haven't checked out Dominique on Instagram, I don't know how you've missed it. She popped up on my feed. A while back, actually on my personal one before I started the, I think before I started or was doing a lot with the podcasts, Instagram, which my poor dust covered personal Instagram is just not getting anything anymore. Cause I just only do the podcast. I can only handle so much social media.
Totally understand. You would be shocked at how relatively active I am on social media, how, like you're saying, it's very difficult to keep up with the content.
Yes. And especially with one that's gotten so much traction in such a short amount of time like yours.
Yeah.
And like I said, and I initially knew I had to get you on the podcast. First of all, you're a hell of a player. I heard some of the stuff you were doing with the band and it sounded great. I was like, okay, awesome. But then I'm also seeing like people don't take it well when people on Instagram are good at something. And like some people get, There's some things that pop in there, and I saw some negative comments. I'm like, what is negative here? Like, what is your deal? I get so mad. I've got a friend of mine, Emily Harris, with the Get Offset podcast. She shows me some of the hate she gets and some of the demos she does and some of the podcast stuff. I'm like, what is wrong with people? And social media, that's the other side of social media that makes it hard for me to do too much, is that sometimes there can be this really negative culture. I'd imagine you see a whole lot of that. And just because it's the more followers you have, the more haters you're going to have, because that's just how this works.
Yeah.
So far, I haven't gotten any haters. They say you've made it when you get some real haters. So
we'll be right back.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
Well, then I've definitely made it. God, no, I think I understand. I mean, sure, some people are going to be negative, and that's okay if not everyone likes what I do. I mean, I don't like everything that everyone else does. Like, that's a good thing. You know, my mom always says that it would be such a boring world if we were all the same and we all had the same opinions, you know, and hopefully, like you're saying, it's much better to be respectful of people and not express that. But I do understand that, you know, on the videos that I'm doing, it's like some people are like, well, you're not playing live. And I understand, you know, on like my, I did a cover of Johnny B. Good, and it does look like it's not synced quite right. And it's so interesting because I just sat there and played it live through the amp, which is there. But you know, we did plug a little microphone into the phone. And so it's picking up a little of that. And so I'm like, well, I don't know, to be honest, that much about technology, but I understand, you know, there's so many fake things out there that people are like, well, sure. I don't understand. I don't know. And, you know, a lot of people, when they think you're fake playing, you're like, look at the fingers. I mean, it's, even if it's, you know, milliseconds off, I mean, that would actually be really challenging to fake play a song. If you could fake play a song, you can real play a song.
Absolutely.
I don't know what would be fake about it, to be honest, unless it's just like a little better tone or something. But that cracks me up too, because to me, I'm like, guys, my tone is, you know, I'm trying the best that I can, but I don't have the most pedals. I come from classical guitar. I've always felt like my tone was to be lacking, and it's something that I'm working on. And so, you know, people are like, oh, it's the same. And I'm like, I didn't match the tone. I hear all the differences. Right. And frankly, to me, that's a compliment that you think it's the same, because I can hear the large discrepancies, you know, but that's really awesome that you think it's that close to the original.
I've discovered in playing in cover bands over the years that a lot of times, even guitarists, so guitarists are what I consider the more informed audience for your guitar playing, you know, because they know.
Yes.
And
yes.
On the milliseconds off thing, not only is it difficult to fake play the solo, and we're not talking Ralph Macchio pretending to play Steve Vai's Licks and Crossroads, you know, like he did a great job, but a guitarist knows that it's not legit. Like a guitarist can watch it and know that it's not legit. No.
Of course.
If you can fake play 3 milliseconds off a video for the entire solo, it's like, come on, guys, it's an encoding thing. It's just the audio and the video didn't quite sync right.
Right. And I know there's some things, you know, if the backing tracks are loud, like I said, you know, it's just so hard to explain the whole process to everyone. I'm like, sometimes I DI and record through Pro Tools and I'm playing it, but I'm like, I don't have those pedals. I don't have a fuzz pedal. So I had to use it, you know, in Pro Tools. That was the only way I could get that sound. But it didn't just magically happen. I still had to play it and then add the fuzz and then honestly take a lot longer to get tones, you know? But like I said, there's no point in just trying to explain it to everyone. And I feel like I'm more passionate about like anyone who just wants to learn about the recording process or making their own videos or, you know, playing live or DIing and running through Pro Tools. Like, I'm happy to answer any questions about that. Not that I am an expert, but, you know, I always want to help those people because I'm like, I remember what it's like. You know, when I was trying to figure out, how do you turn on the camera? I don't get it. This is all terrible.
But it doesn't take long, especially in the beginning, just like in anyone learning an instrument or learning a new skill. You learn a lot very quickly in the beginning. And so it doesn't take long before you have expertise that brand new beginners know. I've already started getting people asking me about podcasting. I'm like, you realize I've been doing this for 7 months, right? Eight months, whatever it is now. Like, I change something every time because I'm learning something new. I learned a new mastering technique, or I learned a new way to get noise out of microphones. Or like when I started the podcast, I was doing phone calls and the audio was terrible. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn how to filter all of that out.
Oh, wow. And
so you learn these things. And the tone thing, even with guitar players, I find if you get the notes right, if you get the feel right, most people don't realize the tone isn't the same. Like,
they
just, as long as you've got the feel and the emotion, well, that's such a cheesy cliche thing to say, the emotion.
No, I know.
But you get what I'm saying. You conveyed the message the way it was meant to be conveyed. They don't notice that your voice isn't pitched the same as the original. You know, it's wild. It's really, really interesting that way. But having said that, and we do talk about gear in this podcast occasionally.
Yes.
Let's talk gear, because you're starting to get really into gear. I saw you got an H9 recently.
Yes, look, it's right here. I was recording with it. I'm going to unplug it. Oh.
Yeah. It's such a cool unit. I had one for a while. And then, yes. Then I had a moment where I was like, I'm selling everything. I'm going to go down to bare bones. And now I'm slowly accumulating things again. It's a terrible disease. Again, I told you. What happens is I accumulate the little things, right?
Because
I can spare $100 here, you know, $150 there, buying pedals over and over and over again. Then all of a sudden I'm like, I really want this guitar. I've got all these pedals I could sell.
Yeah.
And so I sell all the pedals, buy the guitar, then I start buying pedals again. It's like, it's so bad. It's so bad.
I get that. No, it's so hard. It's like you're saying, when you sell gear, you know, last year, the reason I did that Johnny B. Goode video with the guitar that I did it with is because I was going to sell that guitar. Because before this, like I said, I was playing shows, but I was also driving for Lyft and Uber. That was like, you know, my day job, although it was more of a night job. And I was like, I don't have any money and I'm not driving, so I'm going to sell, you know, this old Epiphone. And so I was like, but before I sell it, I want to do like one video with it. And it was really funny because it was my first video, you know, that got 1 million on YouTube and 1 million on TikTok and stuff. And I was like, well, I can't sell it now. And I was like, also, it sounds so good, you know. But yeah, it's so funny because I was like, if I had sold it, I definitely would be trying to buy it back right now.
That's interesting because I find that with guitar players. A guitar never sounds as good as the day before you're going to sell it.
It never. I think you're right.
It's very true. I never want a guitar more than the day before I'm about to either ship it off or sell it to somebody. Yes. So I pretty much don't sell guitars much anymore. It's like guitars I get really attached to. That's why this addiction like happens.
I get that.
So you got the H9, which is
the
like...
H9.
Swiss Army knife does everything.
So I got the H9 because one of the guys we're recording with, he records on like all of country radio, basically. I mean, just so many sessions like every day in Nashville, and like the list of number ones he's played on is just insane. You know, everything from Sam Hunt, Luke Combs, Tim McGraw stuff, you know, just all this stuff. And he's just a really amazing player. And so he had it and he used it on our single called Stubborn Woman. And I was just like, what is this pedal? Like, it sounds so good, you know? And so I ended up buying it. And I, you know, I wasn't sure, honestly, because it's a pretty expensive pedal and it does a lot. And there's an app and stuff, which I love the technology part of it. But I, like I said, I'm, you know, still a little bit of a newbie to gear. So I wasn't sure if it's going to be as good as people have told me. And it has exceeded my expectations, which is insane for how much I expected from it in the first place.
Right.
You know, but like I said, all like, not all, but I mean, a lot of my friends who go on tour with major acts, they're using it. Studio guys are using it. And so I was like, okay, if all these people have it, there must be something to it. You know, literally the first, I opened it up and I used it in a session 2 days ago. And I don't, you know, I'm still learning the pedal, and that's how good it is that I was just able to, you know, take it out of the box and go. See. And it's really cool.
I found when I had mine, all the effects are good. All of them are top notch. But the rotary sound on that thing, that rotating speaker still haunts me. And it may be the reason I end up buying another one is just
it's
for
so
the rotary
good.
Speaker sound.
Well, and because like I said, it's, you know, it has a lot of technology in it, with all the algorithms and stuff, and it has the app. My friend that's a session player actually sent me all his settings,
nice.
Which was very, very sweet of him. Just so generous, because I know it took him a really long time to come up with all these things. And so it's really, really awesome. Like I said, I'm never giving it away.
No,
I'm just as long as I can.
It's going to end up being my Swiss. I'm going to end up getting one again just because I'm going to have to. All right. Now I use the HX Stomp as a Swiss Army knife pedal to do a lot of things.
And yes.
I think it's great. But I am a rotating speaker junkie. I used to actually play live with a Leslie 16, which is like it's basically the Vibratone. It was the precursor to Vibratone. But it's it's like carrying a you know, a dorm fridge with you every time you go on top of your amp. It's like, it just got to be too much. And
that's a lot.
Yeah. And I don't like the rotating sound on the HX Stomp as much as I liked it on the H9. And I can't imagine in Nashville, because, you know, I've played here where I get to drive my vehicle and park right next to the loading dock, you know, the loading door of the venue I'm playing. Whereas I was there last week and I'm watching a guy wheel his amp, guitar and pedal board, you know, four blocks away to get to his gig. And I'm like,
at least 4 blocks.
Yeah.
We all wheel at least 4 blocks.
It's awful. I couldn't do it. I've done festivals where I've played, playing with multiple bands, or I'm playing multiple sets in different places. You know, I'm at the outdoor stage at one, and then I've got this indoor gig at this place. And it's, you can't drive your car. So you've got to have a dolly. I bought one of those. And I should put a, post a picture on Instagram, but I bought one of those. I went to Lowe's and bought one of those like metal garden carts that has like, it's phenomenal. It's
the perfect. Fold up or just the regular one?
This is the regular one. It doesn't fold up, but you can take the, so it's heavy, it's big. You need a bigger vehicle if you're going to use it. I had a pickup truck at the time, so it was great. Now I don't have a pickup truck. It's not so great, but I highly recommend them. It's got instead of hard plastic tires, it's got the big inflatable rubber tires, so it can go over every terrain. I'll post a picture. I'll go out to my, my shop and take a picture and put it on Instagram, but
it's awesome.
It was game changer for those kinds of events. But now I don't, I just, with the exception of one venue I play that has like the stairs of death, Oh, it's so bad. There are, you know, I haven't played Nashville. I've never played a gig in Nashville.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which is weird. You know, I lived in Murfreesboro, played a few things over in Murfreesboro, but never played in Nashville. Are there a lot of venues with stairs? Is that still a pretty common theme?
Yes, but we just use the elevator to load.
That must be nice. I've never had to use
the stairs. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's why I go to the gym, so I can carry my amp. Woo. It's the only reason.
So amp, I see the one next to you. Is that your main amp?
That's my only amp.
Okay.
I don't have another one.
Oh,
that's
see,
it.
You are still just getting into this. Just wait. The amp journey is crazier than the guitar accumulation. Like even if you think you've got the amp,
yes,
inevitably you want another one and another.
Yes.
So what are you playing through now?
So this is a third power amp. It's a third power Woolly Coats and it's custom. Yes. I love it so much. So it kind of, a lot of people think it's a Vox because it looks like a Vox. Sure. I had it, you know, made like that. But yeah, I just love it so much. It's got a really great like reverb sound and you can just get all these different tones on it. And, it's honestly everything I ever need, you know? And, I've used it literally at every gig for the past 5 years, everything from like little bars to giant festivals. And so it's really stuck with me to my videos. Really? Yeah. Like I said, I haven't used anything else. I'm like, hey, if it's working and sounding great, why would I ever want anything else? But I'm very loyal. This is the first year that I've ever even had like more than a couple of guitars. You know, I'm always just like, hey, I just want to like, if I have a guitar, I'm going to play that guitar and like use it all the time. And, you know, I never want to just a bunch of guitars sitting around. So now that I have like 10 guitars, I try to rotate them like every day. So they all get their turn.
Yeah.
And it's also why I try to do, you know, so many guitar giveaways because I'm like, I want guitars to be played. Like, it's cool. You know, I know some people, actually my uncle has a really great like vintage guitar collection, although he doesn't play guitar, but I know some people have guitars that just sit there, but you know, I want them. I feel like they deserve love. They deserve music. And so I never want them to just be sitting.
And that's the thing. Once you have, you reach a point with your guitars where you're like, I'll talk to some players and they're like, oh, I think I still have that Telecaster. It's in its case in a storage unit somewhere. And I'm like, I can't stand to have my guitars in cases where I can't just pick them up and play at any moment. Like
me too.
I like to have them next to me where I can just grab one and just start playing, plug in. And so once a guitar has relegated to a case and it's in a corner, that's when I'm like, maybe it's time to get rid of that guitar. If
I agree,
if I don't want to play it so much that I put it away in a case, maybe it's time to change some things. So the Third Power is a company that sort of jumped on my radar recently. They're Nashville based, if I'm correct.
Yes,
and they're woman owned, which is fantastic. That's another, not a lot of that in the industry. It's nice to see that starting to pop up and see a little more representation in the industry.
Yes.
But on top of that, I'm seeing them on stage with some monster players.
Yeah.
And I've yet to play one because I have not come across one yet. They're not in a lot of dealers, obviously, that I
get
to. And so my goal is to play a couple next time I go to Nashville. Not that I need another amp, but.
We'll be right back.
You still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do
do your homies got a role in your little, you know, man?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man. I'm trying to get them on there. We all artists, man. You gonna have this like.
Bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now. I gotta lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
Yeah, you should. You should go see Delana because, like you're saying, they are just flying off the shelves. Like, there's this, just everyone wants them because they sound so good.
Yeah.
You know, like you're saying, it's that thing where, you know, people who are playing professionally and, you know, they love them and they want that, you know, so other people see them and they're like, yep, I need that too, you know.
Yeah. I need to try to get her on the podcast. Not that she has all the time in the world or anything, but I should.
Yeah, no, you should. She knows her stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, so much.
I love seeing it. I love, from the first time I like the aesthetic of them. I'm an aesthetic person.
Me too.
It's gotta look good too. You know, some people are like, if it sounds good, that's all that's matter. No, it's like I have this bad trait and I'm going to see if you're like this.
Yes. Okay.
Now you play a combo, which makes it a little easier. So imagine you didn't play a combo. Imagine you had a head and a cab.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to have the head and cab match.
Like, yeah, I was like, I already know my answer.
Yeah, they've got a match. If I've got I have a two rock amp. I have to have a two rock cab. Like it has to match the aesthetic.
Right. I mean, if you've seen my Instagram, you know that I can't even deal with my guitars not matching my shirt. So I don't know how I would deal.
Yeah, exactly. With
the amp not matching. No, but it's fun. It's like you're saying, it's definitely not something that's very common in guitar world because it's always been a very male dominated world. Not that, you know, guys don't care.
Sure.
But for the most part, you know, they don't as much. And so it's been really funny, actually, how many people have commented like, hey, I love that, you know, your clothes match your guitar. Hey, I love that your clothes match your guitar. And I was like, that's really funny. I was just doing that because I like matching, but people have really caught on to it.
Yeah. People notice it. It definitely, it's an interesting aesthetic and, you know, the fuddy duddies are like, oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. When you're on stage, especially in a music town like Nashville, appearance is part of the ball game. It's sort of like I tell people all the time, this is so dumb and this is so minor, but it's like, I won't play a gig in shorts. I see it all the time and I'm like, I won't do it.
Yeah.
I don't play a gig in shorts.
Right.
It just doesn't looks like you were on vacation and you wandered into a blues jam It frustrates me. It's dumb. I'm going to get tons of hate for saying that. I know someone's going to be so mad that I'm like, I wear shorts. And they're going to reference like pop punk from like the 90s where they all wear shorts.
I was
going to
say, like Red Hot Chili Peppers. That would work. Some of the California bands.
Exactly. That's a totally different aesthetic. You know,
yes.
I get it. Like if that's your thing and you're wild on stage and like especially some of those Chili Pepper style bands and some of the pop punk, you know, I'm not even going to name a band and embarrass myself and pretend I know pop punk, but I do remember it was a thing and it was energetic, right?
Totally.
Yeah. Everybody else was listening to that in the 90s, I was listening to Willie Nelson records. I'm so old.
That's amazing.
Yeah. My first music was, I was real young, you know, ignoring radio, like my first active listening experience was my mom and stepdad had a record player, 8-track player. And it had sitting in a closet, like it wasn't even hooked up. So I figured out how to hook it up. I'm like 9-10 years old, hooking up wires that, you know, I didn't know if they'd kill me. Turns out they won't. But and like
it turns out they won't.
And the first thing I listened to was Willie Nelson, Redheaded Stranger, like on record, on vinyl. And it was great. That was my first active, I can remember because I didn't even take the stereo out of the closet to set it up. I set it up in the closet. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like sitting there in the closet listening to Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard. And they had a Lynyrd Skynyrd 8-track that I was listening to. And so I was that guy in like all of high school. Everybody's getting into like Blink 182 and Green Day. And the Nirvana thing was just sort of on the tail end just before Kurt died. We'll just leave it at that. We'll let y'all all say how he died to yourselves. But I didn't get into any of that. And so musically, yeah. I was into like country and rock and roll, and I discovered the Black Crowes and changed my world. And then I discovered blues, which is crazy that I had to discover blues. I'm from Clarksdale, Mississippi. You know?
That's funny. Yeah.
I had to discover blues, and I discovered it through seeing Johnny Lang on the Disney Channel. And then all of a sudden, Johnny referenced B.B. King, and I'm like, I know that name. That's from down the road. And it was weird getting into music as a kid in the 90s. Who wasn't into that whole power punk thing. I went on a major divergent just there for a second. So you guys are in the studio. Y'all are recording now. Mm-hmm. You're working on a new full length album or EP?
EP. Okay. We're just doing a few songs. Yeah.
So, got a tentative release date, or y'all just kind of just as it comes going free flow?
Yeah, as it comes. I mean, I think we've done we've released a couple of EPs before, and we've done the big, release and lead up to it. And so this time, we really just want to make sure that we get the music right and we take as much time in the studio as we need to just really love it and be happy with it. And we are really happy so far. So I actually think it's going to be a pretty fast process. But we just don't want to, we're not putting it out there just to put it out there.
Sure.
Like I said, we want to really love it when we do. So I think too, these days it's, most people don't have a big lead up time with releases. It's, especially with the world of TikTok, and we are really active on there. And so it's like, you kind of just play your song over and over and, see how people react to it. And if there's not a great response, then you go on to the next one and you go on to the next one, rather than the kind of hey, my song is coming out in a month, pre-save it now. I don't know about other people, but personally, I don't have that attention span, even if it's for Ariana Grande or Carrie Underwood. I only want to know, I'll take it 2 days before, I want to know on Thursday before New Music Friday that it's coming out. And that's, because we're just hit with so much content all the time that I'm not going to remember it. I'm sure marketing people have, a different spin on it because it's actually their job. But just as a fan of music, when I like to see, other people's stuff, if it's more than a week before, I just won't remember,
That's an interesting take, because I agree. It's like I have this mentality, and I do this at work too, and it drives some of my staff crazy. I'll give them a heads up like a month out, say something's happening, or say I've got a gig, mm-hmm. like this mm-hmm. gig I've got tonight.
Right.
But then I'm not going to mention it until the day before, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. I know that some people like to pretend they plan their life super in advance. But let's be honest, most people actually don't.
Right.
They pretend they do. Now, you do end up with that percent that's like, oh, I already had dinner plans, or oh, I was doing this other thing. But for the most part, there's a lot of us that decide what we're doing Friday night on Friday afternoon.
That's true.
So I'm going to start just calling it the Taylor Swift model of just all of a sudden releasing it. Like, don't warn anybody. Just, oh, hey, new music today.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And, when she put out music, I listened because I love her and I love her music and I wanted to hear it,
Exactly. And when I hear about something, and of course we're talking a major star here, but when you hear that it's out, you want to be able to experience it then, because all of a sudden they've got your attention right now.
Yeah.
Need it to be available.
Right. And the TikTok whole thing, is you just put up some of the chorus or some of the verse and say, hey, help me blow this up. Hey, if I get a certain amount of views on this video, then I'll release it for you guys, on Spotify, which again, I think that's a cool thing too, because it's sometimes, so hard to try to get people to like your music. And, I heard even with Megan Thee Stallion, it wasn't WAP, it was the first one, Savage. It was she had a full EP and she was signed and they were trying to figure out which single to push. And they had the one that they thought was the single. And TikTok said, hey, let us just show it to people and just put it up on the app and see which one people like. And, the one that ended up working was Savage. And then they said, hey, can we push this instead of the one that you guys want to be the single? And they said, okay. And obviously that worked out, very well for her, And so it's she just did her part. She wrote the song, she made the music, but then you don't get to decide, what people connect with and what they hold on to and what they feel like serves them. And that's the whole point of music anyway. It's all, a give and take.
Welcome to the world of art, just art in
general.
You get to make it, but you don't get to decide what it means. like,
right. And you don't get to decide, you know, if it's popular or not. And that's funny. It's like you had mentioned before with my guitar videos, some people were upset, you know, that they're short and they're like, please post longer ones, you know? And I, like I said, I don't want to tell everyone everything, but it's like, I have posted longer ones and no one watches them, which is why I don't post more of them, you know? And it's like, that's why I'm like, I play shows for 4 hours, you know, come out to see that. I do play for a really long time. It's not that I just play for 15 seconds at a time, but it's that that kind of content doesn't seem to work. And so I don't post it because if people don't want to see it, you know, then what's the point? I play for 8 hours by myself all the time, right, every day, you know? But it's definitely, yeah, a really interesting world of social media.
And I've seen that with, like, take the podcast episodes away, because I do put the podcast up on YouTube, obviously. Mm-hmm. And mainly the reason I do that is because I started using StreamYard because the audio is better than the phone calls, yeah, I was using.
Right.
And the audio is better than Zoom. It's better than a lot of the others. But, you know, most people aren't sitting and watching this podcast for an hour, and I understand.
Right.
But even in my demos, like, I'll do, which I don't have a lot up. I have some up on another channel that is now mostly hidden just because.
In your social media.
Yes. So, sorry, y'all, we had a little bit of a technology hiccup.
Glitch.
Yeah, just a little glitch. If you hear like an obvious break in there, that's what happened. If you noticed me in the middle of a sentence, it happens. Welcome to the wonderful world of technology. We talked about recording in triplicate now because you never know.
That's right.
But the I did demos, and like if you go more than like 5, 6, 7 minutes on the demo of a product, people aren't watching it. Like,
right.
And so I found that like the 1 minute I do something on TikTok or I do something on YouTube Shorts or I do something on Instagram, way more traction than like the 5, 6 minute thing or the 7, 8 minute thing. Cause people don't want to sit that long. People just don't.
Right.
We have the diminishing attention spans that our, you know, three generations ago warned us that TV was going to give us.
I know. It's sure. Here.
It's here. It's absolutely here. So we have been talking actually a while. So that glitch actually happened right near the end. I know you've got to get to back to some doing some recording. You were recording till like 1 a.m. last night or something like that.
We actually ended up not leaving till 2.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's of course, you know, me 10 years ago would have been like, oh, the party's just getting started at 1 or 2. We're just getting going. Now I'm like, oh my gosh, that is so late. I'm so old. So we're going to let you get back to doing, getting some records done. I'm going to ask you, I'm going to get us a couple of hot takes. I don't normally do a lot of questions, Blake Weiland, if you listen to this, because Blake Weiland has some classic questions he likes to ask at the end of his podcast. But since I was just in Nashville, I'm going to ask, we're just going to do a couple of hot takes. Don't think too hard about it because I have a point I'm trying to make and I'm going to be very sad. If you go the opposite.
Okay.
Best hot chicken in Nashville.
I'm vegan.
Oh no. Oh, see, that's going to be, I knew that was going to be what ended up catching it. That's okay.
So, but I always tell everyone Hattie B's. My sister came into town and she tried it and she absolutely loved it.
I'm a Prince's fan. I love Prince's.
I get it.
Because I like to feel like my mouth is melting and that's what their heat does. I was vegan for 2 years actually. And,
if you like hot chicken and you're vegan, we have a really good place. I'm totally blanking. I was like, it's not Butcher and Bee. It's in East Nashville. Oh my gosh. I cannot remember the name of it right now. They make seitan and they make, like vegan cheese, like coconut stuff. And they sell it in Whole Foods and I'm the Beehive.
Oh,
it's like, it's not Butcher and Bee, the Beehive. And they actually have a little shop on Gallatin and they have vegan hot chicken. And so I'm going to go with that. I know no one else would say that answer, but like I said, my sister went to like actually Hattie B's and then we had that back to back and she really loved both of them. So
sure.
I'm
a Prince's fan. Like I said, I did the vegan thing for 2 years and it was very health related. It wasn't like an animal thing.
That's mine too. Yeah.
Cause it is a much healthier way to eat if you do it right.
I'm not 100% vegan, but like 99, and like you're saying, it's for health reasons.
Yeah. I did discover a lot of things when I was vegan that I did not think I would like. I tell mm-hmm. people all the time that I think soy ice cream is better than regular ice cream. I just do.
So good.
It is so very, very good and so much better for you than, yeah. than all that. Last thing though, cause we're talking okay. gear. We're gonna wrap this up. So you're in the gear journey. You're yes. buying pedals.
Yes.
I'm always interested cause you have a very interesting assortment of guitars. Like
yes.
you have everything from like, you know, Strat style stuff and classic stuff to shredder stuff. You've got
yes.
You've got one that is like all hot pink. Like, is that right?
So that I gave that one away.
Okay,
that was part of a giveaway. Yes, that yeah. was a really cool Dean guitar.
I remember seeing that when I was like, that is a statement guitar. That is
yes.
That screamed 80s to me. Like
yes. Yes, it did.
I missed an opportunity a few years ago to buy an Ibanez RG550 in Road Flare Orange, which I also think is a statement guitar.
Wow. It is a statement guitar.
I'm real sad I didn't get it, but I'm not a shredder. It would have been total irony for me because I'm yeah. just not a shredder.
Yeah.
So what is your main guitar? Have you found it yet? Or do you still kind of find what's going to be your voice?
Yeah. So I think I have three main guitars. So like I said, for years, I only had one electric guitar sure. and it was my Fender American Standard. I got it painted white, but it actually came in brown and it has a Wonder Woman on it. And then I have different pickups in it. So I have Vonsco like custom pickups cause I really wanted hotter pickups for a Tele. So that's the one that I play downtown all the time. That's the one that I've been playing for years. That's like my main guitar. And then I did a thing for Fender Play with Fender, and they gave me a Strat, a single coil Strat. And so I love that one. It's my yellow guitar. It's like the buttercream. So I call her Princess Buttercup. And yeah, so I really love that just because I love Strats, and I grew up like loving John Mayer and Eric Clapton and Hendrix and like a lot of Absolutely. Those, you know, Strat guys. And then my last guitar that I've really been getting like a lot more into, it's the Speed of Light guitar. It's a Dean guitar and it's a Michelangelo like signature. And so I've been taking guitar lessons with a guy named Reggie Wooten in Nashville. And he does a lot of like tapping and a lot of whammy bar stuff. Well, I shouldn't say whammy bar, a lot of Floyd Rose stuff. Sure. And so he was like, you need a guitar with a Floyd Rose. So I got that one. And so he was so nice and he set it up for me. It has like sevens on it and it plays amazing. And so I've been using that a lot because the more I get into kind of like sweep arpeggios and like I said, you know, Floyd Rose stuff, the whammy bar and tapping and all of that, it's like, that's the one that I'm practicing on. And, you know, how can I possibly, a Floyd Rose is a different guitar. Sevens is a different guitar than a Tele. So
yeah.
I'm still playing the Tele all the time. That's my main, you know, gigging guitar. But as I switch over, I'm going to get this one. I need like strap locks and stuff on it before I can actually play it like out.
Sure.
But it might start becoming my main guitar just because I can do so many more things. And the clean tone is amazing, which blows my mind, you know, because you would think, oh, it's a shredder guitar and it right. looks like a shredder guitar. And it is. But every time I play clean through it, I'm just really shocked at how good the pickup sounds. So, yeah, but my favorite guitars in general are Fenders. I have a bunch of them and I use it for all my recording and everything. So
I think
I guess that wasn't a very good answer for one.
No, but no, it's fine. I think a lot of people underestimate how good the clean tone and some of the shredder. My first guitar was a Jackson with a Floyd Rose, my first electric.
Yeah, so you
yeah.
understand.
Yeah, it was a license. It wasn't a great Floyd Rose, so my experience okay. wasn't amazing. I tried okay. for a long time to play it, but it was unstable. It just wasn't as well made as like the really good metal, the way they make the good Floyd Roses now. Metal mm-hmm. as in metal, not metal as in music, listeners.
Right.
So also taking lessons from Reggie Wooten is pretty serious. For listeners, if you don't know who Reggie Wooten is, please press pause or,
yes.
you know, we're close to the end. Look it up at the end here. Yeah. You've heard the last name before. So, Reggie's a monster player.
He's insane.
I've never met he or his brother. I have met, I think it's a cousin. There's so many Wootens who are musicians and are unbelievable yeah. musicians.
Yeah.
Wooten musicians. The drummer as well in that
family. Future Man is great.
Oh,
Roy Future Man.
Yeah, he is unbelievable. I'm going to go down a Bella Fleck and I'm going to stop myself
okay.
before I go down my Bella Fleck like fanboy moment. Cause
yeah.
I don't play banjo. I've played banjo a little bit for, you know, band needed a banjo and like all they wanted was strumming or just picking. I was like, okay,
yeah.
don't give me solos. I don't know what I'm doing on this thing. But last thing we'll cover, just because you said it, I promise. But you said sevens. So I've seen you mention that in a comments before. People ask you what strings you use. And I recently went on a string journey last year. Like I went and tried like everything from like eights to 13s. I could not find sevens. So I, but I found that going down to eights, everybody's like, oh, it's a, you lose tone. You don't sound as good. Yeah. Or blah, blah. I was like, garbage. So much garbage. The eights sounded great. The only reason I don't still use them and I went back up in gauge is just because the way I play, I'm primarily a blues player, and the way I play, I had trouble bending in tune with eights because I just overbent all the time. So I went back to the strings because I don't want a guitar to fight me. I love the old quote about B.B. King looking at Billy Gibbons once, and Billy Gibbons was playing like 11s or 12s on his guitar, and B.B. King looked at him and said, why are you working so hard? And that's when Billy Gibbons, this could be apocryphal, but that's when he went down to eights and started playing eights. So you play sevens. Where do you buy sevens?
Oh, Reggie gave them to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. I wondered really if you had to go to like a custom string maker or something like.
I know he gave me a very special thin pick too. That also, I was like, Reggie, I want to buy more, and he was like, yeah, they don't make them anymore. And I was like, I went to a Guitar Center and I tried 8 different picks to try to match this. They're all around like 0.46 or 0.50. I was like, I can tell it's like around that, right? I tried 8 different ones and none of them were like close to it. And he's like, it's discontinued. Sorry.
Oh no. That's when you start scouring reverb and eBay.
Oh, I'm going to. Oh, just wait. It is a magical pick and it totally, you know, it's so interesting. And like, I just try to be open to the process and open to different things. And like, it's definitely, it's so interesting. Like the pick changes your tone and the strings, you know, change your tone and your technique. And it did take a little while to get used to, cause I was used to nines, which isn't that big of a difference from nines or tens, you know? But once you get used to it, and that's what I'm saying, I'm starting to get too used to it. So it's starting to get actually really hard to go back the other way. It's crazy.
I could imagine. I like many guys, of a certain age, got really into Stevie Ray Vaughan at one point and tried to do the 13s. And then I'm like at some point I stopped. I was like, even Stevie stopped playing 13s. There's a reason.
That's
stop
right.
It's just, it's ridiculous. Cue all the jazz guys saying, oh, you wimp.
Yes.
But well, that's picks. I had that conversation. I had Rick from Honey Picks on the podcast and he makes some pretty insane picks. I actually have one right in front of me. It's like a 5.6. It's, it's a big old beefy pick. I really like it. I like thicker picks just because they work well for my technique. It's all technique and tone thing. But I think a lot of players don't think enough about the pick they use. And they think they all, it's just a pick. I don't have to worry. They have a sound. The strings have a sound.
They do have a sound.
So, well, Dominic, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. I appreciate you talking with me for a little while. Sad we didn't get to connect at NAMM, but I'm gonna be back in Nashville a ton. Maybe one day we'll be able to do this again.
Let me know when you're back.
We'll do an on-site. I'll try to talk like Fanny's into letting us go over to Fanny's House of Music and do a podcast from there.
That'd be awesome.
Or something like that. Listeners, I appreciate you hanging out, appreciate you listening, watching, whatever you are doing. If you've made it this far, if you do me a favor, you obviously liked listening to the podcast. So do me a favor and share it with your friends. Like, subscribe, leave a review, leave a comment. All those things help the podcast find more listeners. You can find us on the internet at 40wattpodcast.com. You can email me at 40wattpodcast@gmail.com. And you can support the show on Patreon for as little as $3 a month or as much as $50 a month. I actually, at the $50 level, I give lessons. Like, we will get together. I'll give you guitar lessons, amazing, piano lessons. We'll talk music theory. Or if you just want to bullshit for an hour, and we'll do it. I don't care. So 40 Watt, that's at patreon.com/40wattpodcast. In the meantime, I want y'all to do me a favor. Be kind to yourselves. Be good to each other. And try to make some noise.
This
This episode is brought to you by the supporters of 40 Watt Podcast over on Patreon. Go over to patreon.com/40wattpodcast, where for as little as $3 per month, you can help support the podcast and get every episode ad-free. For $5 a month, you'll get every episode ad-free, as well as a bonus episode every week. I can't overstate how thankful I am for the support of my patrons, and hope you'll consider joining the team and helping keep this show on the road.